My name is Ifeoluwa Olorinipa, and I'm an analyst at Sahel Consulting. I'd like to welcome everyone joining us today on the Sahel Educators Conference. Thank you for joining. We're excited to have you on this platform where we'll be discussing and sharing practical ideas on how to enhance agribusiness research and education in Nigeria. So first on our agenda is the welcome address and a brief introduction to Sahel. And at this time, I'd like to introduce our associate partner at Sahel Consulting, Mr. Temitope Adegoroye, who would be delivering the welcome address and giving an introduction to Sahel. Temi, over to you.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to welcome everyone from all over the world participating in this conference to this conference. Thank you for joining the Sahel Educators Conference 2020. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to make this conference. Over the next few minutes, I'm going to be sharing. Some insights around some introductions around why we started this conference, and also introducing Sahel as a company. Of course, you would all agree with me that agriculture, the role of agriculture in ensuring the sustainability of the Nigerian economy, even within these trying times, and also securing our food ecosystems during this period cannot be overemphasized. And that's why it's also very critical for us to ensure that we are rethinking agribusiness research and education in Nigeria, given the critical role that research and education plays in developing a very strong agricultural sector. And that's why Sahel is organizing this conference to really brainstorm and discuss various topics that can help us rethink agribusiness research and education in Nigeria, and also help us to build the right talents that we need to achieve the transformation that we desire, so we desire in the sector. So you're welcome. The next few slides are going to be, I'm going to be talking about the overview of Sahel Consulting. So Sahel Consulting and Sahel Capital are sister companies. I'll start off with Sahel Consulting. In 2010, we were established and were committed to transforming Africa's agriculture and nutrition landscape. We partner with government agencies, with private sector companies, with leading international development organizations and other private sector organizations to conduct research, market-based research, to analyze and shape policies, to develop strategies, to launch innovative businesses and ecosystem solutions, and to organize trainings for sector stakeholders and organize campaigns. And of course, we're doing all of this to promote the sustainable agricultural development across the continent. Our vision and mission, the vision is to be recognized as the most trusted partner, consulting partner, and point of reference in the African and agricultural landscape, integral to building effective and efficient value chains and attaining food security. We have a mission to transform Africa's agriculture and nutrition potential landscape through tailored innovative market-based research, strategic and industry services, training, innovative business and ecosystem solutions to impact communities and achieve sustainable growth. Our values are accountability, excellence. We're also driven by, dynamic, very agile. We have integrity and we are purposeful in the way we use our time and our energy. We're very result oriented. Our key service areas include advisory services. We provide a range of advisory services, market entry, strategies, business restructuring activities for various clients. We conduct in-depth analysis across several value chains in agriculture, leveraging a deep industry knowledge and a network of very knowledgeable field consultants. We conduct agribusiness training, so we educate a lot of emerging entrepreneurs who are interested in learning more about opportunities in the agricultural landscape, and we're very committed to establishing and growing successful agri businesses. We also conduct policy consulting. We based on the data-driven research that we conduct, we provide recommendations to governments at all levels, and also provide opportunities to several international development organizations that we work with. We also implement projects. We have a number of both short-term and long-term implementation projects that we're currently implementing across various value chains in agriculture. Why we're unique and key areas of technical competence is really around our experience in the West African agricultural landscape. We've worked extensively in this landscape in West Africa. We've conducted several in-depth market research across several value chains, ranging from livestock to cereals and legumes to root and tuber crops and edible oils. And also focus on food and ecosystem related solutions and nutrition. Also, we have very strong and capable field research teams within the various communities where we work across West Africa. We have teams who have been with us for some of them have been working with us for a long time, who we leverage to work in those very remote areas. We have experience in agribusiness management training. I also have very strong networks and credibility across West Africa. This slide is showing some of our partners. It's not exhaustive, but it's just listing out some of the partners that we work with. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, of course, one of the biggest development partners, the USAID, and a few other local partners, both in government and also in the private sector. So a bit about Sahel Capital Agribusiness Managers Limited. So Sahel Capital Agribusiness Managers Limited is a private equity firm focused exclusively on the Nigerian agribusiness sector. And Sahel Capital adopts an integrated approach to providing capital solutions to meet the needs of companies within the agribusiness space in Nigeria. The vision of Sahel Capital is to be recognized as the foremost food and agriculture private investment firm in Africa. And Sahel Capital has a mission to provide capital to leverage knowledge to build companies, generate returns, and impact lives. Sahel Capital is managing the Fund for Agricultural Finance in Nigeria, FAFIN, which is the first private equity fund managed by the company. FAFIN was launched in 2014, and FAFIN invests in high growth enterprises across the agricultural value chain, such as integrated processing, production, packaged food products, livestock distribution, and logistics. In providing capital to companies, the fund also has a technical assistance facility that helps to manage capacity building in the areas of maybe company finances, product certification, also market research, environmental, social, governance related activities, and so on. FAFIN was jointly sponsored by the German government through KfW, Development Bank, and also the Nigerian government through the Federal Ministry of Agriculture and Development and the Nigerian Sovereign Investment Authority. A few other organizations and international development finance institutions have also invested capital in the fund, such as CDC Group, the AFDB, and the Dutch Growth Fund as well. To date, FAFIN has invested in seven companies that are located in various states in Nigeria. And these companies are actually operating in several market chains. LNZ Farms is based in Kano, involved in dairy processing. Crest Agro Farms is based in Kogi State, and it's focused on cassava production and processing. Coach Harris Farm is focused on rice production processing. Dainty Farms is in Kwara, producing, raising poultry, birds, and processing birds. Cameron Pears is also located in Kwara and is focused on processing vegetable oil. We also have Fully Feed and also the Nari Group Limited. So that's the brief about Sahel Capital. But also within Sahel, we have the Sahel Research and Advocacy, which focuses on we sharing our thoughts developing them into articles and publications that are important to share with various stakeholders within the agricultural landscape. In 2019, we developed about 7 weekly articles and published in the local newspaper Business Day in Nigeria. We also developed 3 op-eds and published them in several international journals. And we also developed quarterly publications. Prior to the quarterly publications, we were developing monthly newsletters, but we changed to quarterly publications. And the next few pages are just showing some of our most recent Sahel quarterly publications. This was focused on agricultural technology. In this, we were exploring the various technologies that stakeholders are currently leveraging to operate within the agricultural landscape. We developed a quarterly on food and cities, and with this, we're just trying to look at the roles of cities in ensuring food ecosystem sustainability and how cities can actually manage the production of quality and healthy, environmentally safe foods. We also developed one on talent in agriculture, which is actually very relevant to today's conference. In talent in agriculture, we were looking at the talent gap in agriculture and what stakeholders can actually do to bridge the talent gap in this space. As part of our own corporate social responsibility, which we refer to as corporate shared values, we worked on 2 programs: Sahel Scholars Program. A Sahel Scholars Program is a program where we partner with faculties across agricultural universities. Last year, we partnered with 5 agricultural universities in Nigeria to organize agribusiness conferences and engage top performing students in their final year in internship, mentorship, and scholarship as well. We engaged about 1,200 students last year, and also about 25 university lecturers participated in the program. And after that program, we invited 5 top performing students to our offices in Lagos for internship and mentorship opportunities. Of course, also provided scholarship to them for their final year years of study in the university. The second program under our corporate shared values is the Employee Matching Fund Program, where we identified 3 main courses in 2019. We identified a course in education in health, and we also implemented a WASH program. In this matching fund, employees, of course, contribute their quota, and the companies match up to effort to impact local communities where we work. And the third aspect of the corporate shared values, which is currently not here, but it will be the Sahel Educators Conference, which we just started. This is the meeting edition. We're hoping that we're able to generate more insights from this program and, of course, continue the program as well. We also host conferences. We organize trainings. Like I said, we organize conferences and trainings during this COVID-19 lockdown period. We've actually organized a number of webinars, sometimes alone as an organization, sometimes in partnership with various other organizations. One of the webinars we hosted was focused on building a resilient food system in Africa, growing your business in a crisis, leveraging innovation and technology to avert a looming food crisis in Africa, and building resilient supply chain. We also hosted webinars on managing an effective workplace during a crisis like COVID-19, and also building resilient and inclusive business models in Africa. Thank you very much. I know, and I we're very excited about this program, and I know that hopefully be able to deliberate and generate useful insights that will help all of us to rethink agribusiness research and education in Nigeria, what it is, where we need to get to, and also what we need to really understand in terms of building the right talent in agriculture, because we know that if we don't have the right talent in agriculture, it's going to be very difficult for us to achieve the transformation that we want to achieve in this sector. So hopefully this webinar will be an eye-opener and will lead us into achieving those. Thank you so much. I wish you an insightful discussion.
Thank you very much, Temi. Before we proceed, I'll just like to state a few guidelines in hopes that we have an interactive session today. So first, for participants, there's the Q&A feature at the top of the screen. For your questions, the speakers and panelists would be responding to them in that room. And so we encourage you to please include the name of the person to whom the question is intended for, so that way you can get a direct response. And also for those of us that use Twitter or your social media, our hashtag for this event is SASP2020 and Go Live with Sahel. So please tag us and engage with our tweets as well. Next on our agenda would be the keynote presentation. And before I'll be introducing the keynote speaker and reading out her bio. So today we're very excited to have with us Professor Catherine Duggan. She is the Vice Dean and Professor of Management and Political Economy at the African Leadership University School of Business in Rwanda. And prior to joining the African Leadership University, she was a professor at the Harvard Business School for nearly a decade, where she developed and taught courses on globalization and leadership to MBA students and executives. She has also received several awards for excellence in teaching. She has taught about economic development, globalization, and doing business in Africa at various business schools around the world, including the University of Oxford and INSEAD. She has spent more than 20 years working in Africa with experience in nearly 24 countries on the continent. She has also written more than 12 case studies on businesses in Africa, as well as academic research on economic development. She earned her PhD in political science from Stanford University and a bachelor's with honors in political science from Brown University. Now I'd like to introduce Professor Catherine. Please go ahead as you deliver the keynote presentation on rethinking agribusiness education in Nigeria. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me just share my screen. But while I'm doing that, I just wanted to thank Sahel not only for putting this together, but also for really being a convening force. I think that what we just saw in terms of all of the activities that you've been doing are real game changers in a sector that, as we all know, is going to push the continent forward, but also where it requires a lot of us to come together as educators and as people working and thinking about agribusiness. So what I actually wanted to do was, I am an educator, as you may have heard, but what I'm not is an agribusiness specialist. So I'm really looking forward to hearing the thoughts of the people who are really working in this sector, digging down into this sector. So rather than trying to do that, what I wanted to do was take us up and change our perspective so that we can really think about a few big questions that refer both to agribusiness and agribusiness education, but also to education in general, education in Africa, but also education around the world. And so this is really what I wanted to do, is to look at agriculture. And this is actually Uganda. I've spent a lot of time in Nigeria, but I also spent quite a bit of time in Uganda. I'll show you why I'm starting with Uganda. but I wanted to take a bird's eye view of what's going on so we can think really about what to do next. So with that, let me start not with anything in terms of agriculture or even education. Let me start with one of my favorite quotes. One of my favorite ever quotes is from Chimamanda Adichie, and she says, stories matter. Many stories matter. Stories have been used to dispossess and to malign, but stories can also be used to empower and to humanize. Stories can break the dignity of a people, but stories can also repair that broken dignity. And the reason I want to start with this quote is that actually, I think that one of the major bridges that we can provide as educators is not just our expertise, not just our understanding of the science, not just understanding of our things like value chains and logistics and operations, but also our ability to communicate all of these things, both to our students, but also to government, to the media, and to the sorts of stakeholders who can really make the difference between success and, let's say, additional challenges. So that's why I wanted to start with this quote. And I also wanted to start with a story of my own, so that I can begin to share my own story with you and set the stage for some of these questions that I wanted to ask. The reason I used Uganda is that about 20 years ago now, I spent time in Uganda. I lived in Uganda for about 2.5 years. And for part of the time that I was there, I was actually living on a farm in a village. And I was there to sort of see what was going on. I was actually doing research on finance and microfinance, but I really wanted to understand rural microfinance and rural agriculture. This is me. I wanted to try carrying water. And so everybody gave me a very tiny jerry can. This is the kind of jerry can that 7 and 8 year old girls would be carrying in the village. I think that you can see me, so you can see that I'm not currently wearing that skirt, although really I should wear that for every presentation in the future. But this, I just wanted to give you a sense of this. The thing that I really took away from the time that I spent in the village was that all the young people in the village wanted to get out of the village. They did not see a future for themselves in agriculture. They saw a future for themselves in Kampala with bright lights. This is not Lagos in terms of bright lights and traffic and the sort of bustle of Lagos, but they really wanted to go to university, to become computer engineers, to make their way in the big city. Now, one of the things that has really changed in the past 20 years is the number of young people in Africa whom I talk to who are really interested in agriculture. But we can do better than this, because it's still the case that a lot of the young people I talk to, and even a lot of people in general, think about agriculture in Africa as the place that you go to raise your goats once you've made your money at the bank, or the place where your grandparents are, the place where perhaps your parents took you when you were a child and you were really annoyed about having to go all the time. But it doesn't seem, the village is not the place that seems like the most exciting driving force on the continent. And yet, as we know, and as the people on this call know very well, it is very much that. So the things that we're seeing and the things that I know that we're going to hear a bit more about and I'm really looking forward to are include things like, how is technology being used in agriculture in Africa? And how do we, again, coming back to stories, how do we tell the story about this? This is something that I know about because I work in Africa and because I work at least on the margins of agriculture and agricultural education in Africa. But it's not the sort of thing that we see on CNN every day when we hear about Africa or when we hear even about agriculture in Africa. The other thing is, how do we change the narrative without, of course, excluding the people who are in the village, the people who rely on agriculture? How do we create a sustainable, inclusive model of agriculture on the continent that simultaneously acknowledges how exciting it is and that simultaneously puts agriculture at the forefront for students who perhaps grew up in the village or perhaps grew up in the city, but think to themselves, I want to be in the place where it's hard, it's challenging, I get to use technology, and I can make an excellent living. And I think that this group of educators on this webinar, but particularly Sahel, are really pushing us forward. I think that's one of the incredible values of this conference. So this brings me to my first question, which is, how do we change perspectives about African agribusiness? And if I want to put this in a slightly less polite way, I can say, how do we make African agriculture and African agribusiness sexy beyond the people who work on this every day? Because the people on this call know how exciting this is. But the question is, how do we, as the people who see this, as the people who live it, how do we reach out and tell these stories to a much broader group of people? And in the end, as you're doing your work, as you're thinking about the things that you're teaching, it's often easy for us to say, I'm doing this over here, I'm doing my work, I'm focusing on the narrow thing that I do, and not thinking about the ways that we can not only tell the world about what it is that we're doing and tell the world about what it is that we're seeing, but also how do we knit those things together into a uniform and integrated narrative? How do we tell this story? So that brings me to a couple of pieces of data that I wanted to give you. So the first question that I'm asking about how we change this narrative is, how do we describe the challenge? And I can basically describe the biggest challenge that our continent, or that the African continent, is facing in this graph. This graph shows you the labor force. This is both the challenge and an opportunity. It shows you the labor force in millions in Latin America, that's yellow, India, that's green, China, that's red, the US, that's gray, Europe, entire continent of Europe, is orange, and blue is sub-Saharan Africa. What this graph shows us is that the young people, the people who are in the active labor force in sub-Saharan Africa, are, as many of us know, going to be the largest group of labor force aged individuals in the world relatively quickly. This is, again, both a challenge and an opportunity. Part of the challenge is, number one, how do we find jobs for people? And number two, how do we make sure that we can feed people? And both of those questions come straight into this issue of agriculture. So going back again, just this issue of most populous countries, we can zero in on Nigeria. So in 2060, Nigeria is estimated to be, it's forecast to be the third largest country in the world, bigger by population than the US. To give you a sense of things, Nigeria is about 1/11th the size of the US. So if we're even just going to feed the population of Nigeria, as all of you know, we have to do it more, we have to do it smarter, we have to do it more efficiently, and we have to come up with new ways to think about blending together this question about how to feed people with the increasingly important and increasingly dire question of how to bring young people into the economy, how to give young people jobs. So, one last graph on this before I move on to my second question. This shows us both, again, the challenge and the opportunity. In Europe, the population is getting smaller over time. Europe is aging and the population is getting smaller. In the US, the population is growing very slowly. And in Africa, this is a population pyramid for the DRC, but any African country that I showed you would look the same. In Africa, we have youth. In Germany and Europe, and to some degree the US, they don't have the kind of youth that we have on the continent. What does that mean? Well, if you believe that good ideas and energy and innovation and a striving for something better comes from young people, then we can imagine that for the rest of our lives, we have the opportunity to see all of those things coming out of Africa. But the question is, how do we explain these opportunities again to young people in Nigeria so that they can be the ones to drive this forward and so that they can be the ones really to knit together the innovation that's going on in African agriculture and African agribusiness with their aspirations for themselves, for their careers, and for their children and their children's careers? So the second big question then is, how do we as educators expand our impact? And again, I found it really interesting to see the list of all of Sahel's activities, including op-eds, including articles, including journals. I think that's fantastic. And I think that we as educators can be inspired by this to ask ourselves how we, both individually and within our institutions, how we expand our impact. So the first question, of course, is how do we attract and train the best graduates in Nigerian universities? And again, this goes back to this question of how do we get young people who thought they were going to be lawyers and engineers when they started university? How do we convince them that the future, this exciting future, is in agribusiness, so that agribusiness is getting systematically the top talent, the most exciting and most innovative talent, but also talent that has experience elsewhere? The second question is, how do we train them? And I'm really looking forward to some of the panelists a little bit later, because I know that there are some very deep insights into these questions, and I will be taking very, very clear notes on that. But the second question is, how do we find the smartest children, in many cases, in these villages, and get them into programs where they can learn skills so that we can bring them back to the village and they can push forward this agenda? And then the next question is, how do we expand the reach of the cutting edge knowledge that we're producing beyond the classroom? How do we make sure that the things that we know are actually being learned, not just by students, not just by students in secondary and even primary and tertiary, but also by people in the field and by people who are actually doing this work? So how can we use technology in many cases to reach farmers, but also to reach people who might wish to shift from one area to another area to bring in and apply these new innovations? So the third big question is, how do we as researchers and educators break down our silos? Those of you who work in universities or those of you who work near universities know how difficult it is for us, even individually, to break out of a sort of siloed mindset, but also how hard it can be sometimes to work in really multidisciplinary ways. And this is something that I think that agribusiness and the education around agribusiness can really do almost better than anybody else. So one question is, how do we understand value chains, which is a really important thing, and it's something that Sahel and many of the other educators on this call have really been exploring and pushing forward and helping us to understand. But I'd like to take this even further, because in America, the ways in which agriculture is financed and the futures markets, which really support American farmers, are some of the most sophisticated financial markets in the world. So this is the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And if you want to sell grain or hogs or other things, you do it in what is one of the most sophisticated financial markets around. As we think about where agriculture fits in globally, but also where it fits in to these incredibly complicated markets, I'd like us to be able to make students understand this, but also for us to understand it ourselves. And I'll tell you, one of the things that we do, one of the things that I do myself, is I write a lot of case studies. I spent some time at Harvard Business School, as you heard, and one of the things that HBS really does well is to write case studies. The case studies that I focused on have been in a number of different sectors, but they include case studies about agriculture investment, but also things like fertilizer companies. So this Sable Chemicals case that I did was about a fertilizer company in Zimbabwe. And this is an amazing case with a ton of detail about how you manage foreign exchange crises, how you manage a political system, and how you do all of that while thinking about the agriculture value chain. So let me give you my last question as I wrap up, which is, how can we lead the world? How can African academics, how can African practitioners of agribusiness, and how can our students and employees and the people whom we talk to and about, how can we lead the world? Because I showed you the population data. Africa is going, for the rest of our lives, Africa is going to be a more and more important force globally. And the question is, how do we make sure that that force is a driver, not just for change around the world, but is a way for other countries, it's a leader for other countries to look at as they ask themselves, how do we think about best practices? How do we find new technology? And how do we drive change in our own countries? So the first thing is, I am very, very pleased that Sahel and the Sahel partners have actually been personally doing this. So you may know that Harvard Business School has asked the Sahel partners to give talks at class day. Essentially, this is graduation at Harvard Business School. And last year, to give you a sense of the sorts of people who do this, last year at HBS, the class day speaker was Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg is a billionaire American who you may remember ran for president for a minute, and he really has made his money with finance and technology. This is the sort of thing that we expect at a Harvard Business School class day event. I'm so excited that Sahel and Ndidi and Mizuho are going to be able to represent Africa and the amazing innovation that we see on the continent and in agribusiness to a huge population of MBAs, their families, and the people who pay attention to this, who are thousands of people around the world. And the last thing I just wanted to leave you with was this slide so that we can all reflect on this question and ask ourselves, what is it that we do that we are most proud of and most excited by? How do we think about those challenges and those opportunities at a global level, at a Nigerian level, at an African level, but at a global level as well? How do we show our students the passion that we have and why we're passionate? How do we show governments why this is so important? And how do we make sure that we're telling the story of African agribusiness, of Africa as the leader in this space, and of the innovations that we are seeing on the ground every day? How do we tell this story to people around the world so that anytime, among other things, you turn on CNN, the thing that CNN is talking about is drones and other ways that African agribusiness companies are really pioneering agriculture rather than the sorts of things that we see on CNN today? So how do we use agriculture to shift the entire narrative? So with that, thank you again. I will stop there and I will stop sharing my screen. But it is a pleasure to be here and thank you again for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Professor Dogan, for that very insightful presentation. We truly appreciate your energy and your passion. And also, we thank you for sharing insight from your work and for raising some very critical questions that set the tone for further discussions today, questions challenging us to, even as consultants, researchers, and professors, to change the narrative, to create an inclusive model for all stakeholders in agriculture, from farmers to the students, and also trying to change the perspective of African agriculture and how we are extending this impact, including young people into agriculture as well. So we really thank you for your presentation. And as you've said, we're sure that the panel discussion will touch on some of these questions later on. So at this time, I want to introduce the next session where we'll be hearing from members of the Sahel team, both from Sahel Consulting and Sahel Capital, who will be sharing key insights from some of our work, especially as we work in developing talent for the sector and how we are contributing to this as well. So I'd like to mention that each presenter has about 5 minutes for their presentation. So I'd like to encourage us to please keep to the time. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Olumide Lawson, and I'm a partner at Sahel Capital. Like Ifeoluwa has said, over the next few minutes, we're going to be sharing a bit about the work we do in Sahel, and also how we believe that our work is having impact on the agricultural value chain and agribusiness in general. So we're going to start with Ramat. She'll be telling us about the Sahel Scholars Program, which will be followed by Ayodeji. He will be telling us about the advancing local dairy development in Nigeria, followed by Temitope Adegoroye. He will be telling us about the yam improvements for income and food security in West Africa. Then, if he will be telling us about nourishing Africa, and finally, Funke Okuwobi will be telling us about Sahel Capital. So I'll hand over to Ramat just to share our insights about the work we are doing on the Sahel Scholars Program.
Thank you so much, Olumide. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ramat Eyinfunju, and I will be sharing insights on our work on the Sahel Scholars Program. I know a few of attendees right now would be familiar with the Sahel Scholars Program. We've been to several universities in the past, but for the sake of those who are not familiar with the program, I'll give a brief overview. So the Sahel Scholars Program is an annual program that Sahel has introduced, both the consulting arm and a private equity sister company. The program was introduced in 2017 with the aim to empower outstanding Nigerian students through conferences, internship, mentorship, and scholarship. So every year we organize the Sahel Scholars Conference, which we just held today, also virtually by 10 a.m. I know a couple of the attendees from the different universities also attended that conference, so we thank you. The Sahel Scholars Program has three critical components, which we use as tools to empower students in the sector. So these components are the assessment and selection, the Sahel Scholars Conference, and the internship and mentorship. So I'll move straight into the assessment and selection of scholars. So while this selection is for us to be able to gain access to top performing students across universities in Nigeria and towards engaging them for internship and scholarship opportunity at Sahel. So what we do for the selection process is we engage the universities directly. So far we've engaged universities like FUNAB, Michael Okpara University, OAU. And so we received the list of top performing students in that university, and we select the top students and engage them in interviews, and then we select the top students in that selection round. Next, please. So next is the Sahel Scholars Conference, which I just mentioned that we had recently this morning. So what we do, what we have done in the past is we hold the Sahel Scholars Conferences in different universities across Nigeria that we have selected and engaged in the assessment process for the students. So at this Sahel Scholars Conference, we bring in entrepreneurs in the agriculture landscape, professionals in the sector, who engage directly with the students, sharing critical insights and opportunities in the sector. And the expected outcome for this is that we use this conference to empower and inspire students to launch careers in the sector. So next is the internship and mentorship at Sahel, which is the critical aspect of the Sahel Scholars Program. On the internship and mentorship part, we have several initiatives through which we engage the students that are selected for the internship. So we have programs like onboarding and training sessions. We engage them in research work and group presentations. They are actively involved on projects in the consulting and the private equity arm of the group. And then we have one-on-one mentorship whereby we assign the students to mentors, to professionals on the Sahel team to coach them on different aspects of leadership, for example, and professionalism in the workplace. So we help to build their talents and build their skills in the sector. And of course, at the end of the entire internship, they are eligible for merit-based scholarship. Expected outcome is that these students will gain hands-on experience in the sector. And so far, we've been at six universities. We've engaged six universities across Nigeria, including OAU, Michael Okpara University, UNN in Nsukka, Ahmadu Bello University, Abuad, and Michael Okpara University, like I've said. So we've held eight conferences so far. Today makes the ninth conference. And then we've had 10 successful scholars who have been involved in the internship program. And through the conferences, we've had an average of at least 500 participants per conference, and we have reached over 2,000 participants. And these are just what the scholars are saying. We had an excellent session with the scholars on the conference today, and they shared the insights that they've gained working at Sahel. So this is just what they're saying about their work at Sahel and how we have been able to help them build their skills and develop talents for the sector. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Rahmat. So next we'll have Ayodeji to tell us about the ALDDN project.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ayodeji Ojo. I'm the Monitoring and Evaluation Officer on the Advancing Local Dairy Development in Nigeria program, ALDIN. ALDIN focuses on improving the livelihoods and nutrition outcomes and empowerment of smallholder dairy farmers within the communities that where we work in Jigawa, Plateau, Kano, Adamawa, Kaduna states of Nigeria. So we are taking a systems approach to solving some of the problems in the dairy sector, which we understand can even be adopted by other sectors. We understand that, you know, there are capacity gaps from, you know, extension support even to the farmers, and we are providing training and extension services, which I'll talk more about in the coming slides. But in terms of the interventions of the program, farmers organization is the first intervention that focuses on identifying smaller dairy farmers, clustering them, integrating them into the supply chain of the partner processors, and having them form self-help groups and strengthening them with appropriate support. We understand that infrastructure is extremely important to milking and you know, improving the productivity of smallholder dairy farmers. And so the program is prioritizing water resource, milk cans, milk collection, things that are going to support the actual milk milking of these smallholder dairy farmers. Then in terms of productivity improvement, we understand that even if you form farmers into groups and then you have the necessary infrastructure, you need to be intentional about productivity improvement, which we have a three-pronged approach, looking at feed and fodder, which we understand is seasonal across Nigeria. We are providing, we are empowering some commercial fodder producers to produce feed so that farmers can have, dairy farmers can have feed for their cows all year round. And then we are prioritizing genetics and breeding. I'll talk about that as we go on. And then animal health, which we understand are critical variables for productivity improvement. And we have the financial inclusion and income diversification support piece, where we are trying to ensure that the farmers have access to financial services, and then there is training and advocacy and behavioral change and policy and advocacy. Then in terms of how we are thinking about capacity building within the sector, we understand that, you know, government is doing a lot of work with their extension agents. So we got government extension agents on board. We trained and retrained them on good dairy practices. And then even community health extension workers are currently working with us from different states to be able to disseminate nutrition education support. But we found that, you know, these extension agents require more information. They require the best practices within the sector, especially around the specific needs of the sector of the dairy farmers. So we had to provide that training support, and then we have been investing in sponsoring learning trips to places where they can also learn more about dairy. In terms of farmers training, we understand that farmers do not necessarily know best practices around even turning their activities into a proper agribusiness. They've been doing agriculture as a way of life. So we've been teaching them about good dairy practices, proper hygiene, good nutrition, and we are leveraging technology in doing this. So in terms of our engagement with the youth, we understand that some of our graduates will require additional training for them to understand the specific needs of the farmers and how they can support them. So because of this, we had to engage private extension agents who have been working actively in our different communities to support the farmers while leveraging technology in that process. I talked about feed and fodder. We are training farmers to be able to take this on as a business, feed and fodder, so that there's a symbiotic relationship even between crop farmers and smallholder dairy farmers as we move on. And then artificial insemination services is one of the things that we are prioritizing on the program. So saying all this is important, is good, but I feel we need to think about the importance of partnership in what we do. We need partnerships with dairy processors to guarantee the market and have an incentive for farmers to be able to prioritize productivity improvement. And then the engagement with government and private sector players for us to be able to collectively break barriers in development. And then partnership with the academia so that we continue to produce graduates that will meet the industry needs and prioritize agribusiness in the way they think about their activities. And I will leave us with a quote that I know is going to drive some of our conversations as we move on, that if you want to move fast, you go alone, and if you want to move far, you have to think of going with people, which underscores a partnership. These are some of the activities in pictures, and we are happy to engage as we move on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ayodeji. So next, we have Temitope Adegoroye. He'll be telling us about the YouthSwap project.
Thank you very much, Olumide. My name is, once again, Temi Adegoroye, Chief Partner at SAHEL Consulting. I'll be speaking briefly on the YouthSwap project, the YAM Improvement for Income and Food Security in West Africa, Phase 2 project, and I'll just be focusing on the training components of the project. Next. So, YouthSwap is a YAM value chain focused project, specifically focused on the system of YAM. And it's basically set up to identify and address the major constraint in the YAM value chain, which is the scarcity of high quality seed YAM for smallholder farmers. We started this project in 2017 and it's going to end in 2021. It's focusing on establishing functional, scalable, and sustainable commercial systems leveraging technology driven by the private sector. And this project is being implemented in both Ghana and Nigeria, the two major YAM producing countries in the world. Next. So in terms of the training focus of YouthSwap, our training component is categorized into three. We have direct engagement with private seed companies who are the private sector partners responsible on this project for commercializing rapid seed production technologies. We have training for smallholder seed yam producers, and we are also engaging with research institutes. For seed companies, we're providing them with tailored business advisory and marketing support to ensure that they can they're able to profitably set up and manage or operate the rapid multiplication technologies, which are the aeroponics system and the hydroponics system. These systems are just ways to grow seed yam in a very quick manner without the soil. And then we're also training the seed company sales teams on sales and marketing of the seed yam tubers that the seed companies have produced. So we organize physical training sessions with the sales teams across the various seed companies. We have about eight private seed companies in all engaged on the project. For the smallholder seed producer training component, we're training them on the benefits of purchasing improved varieties of yam and how they can actually use improved agronomic packages such as the adaptive yam mini-set technique, which is a new technique used in multiplying and producing seed yam in a way that is profitable for a smallholder seed producer. We're training them on that, which is more of a technical component, and partnering with various organizations to conduct that training. For the research institute, we are training them on business. The researchers are responsible for producing breeder seeds through technologies and providing them with business training as well. In terms of training impact to date, private companies, like I said, we have our eight companies and we've trained about 54 staff of seed companies on sales and marketing on business. For farmers, we've engaged farmers through demonstration trials and farmers field days organized across various locations in both Nigeria and Ghana. And we have about 3,829 farmers attended that to date. Researchers, we've engaged about 19 researchers across three research institutes focused on YAM, most especially the National Crop Research Institute in Nigeria, which has a mandate for YAM, and the Crop Research Institute in Ghana that has a mandate for YAM in Ghana as well. In terms of people reach, we've also leveraged mass media, digital marketing platforms to reach us 60,000 plus people using various messages to sensitize people. And this slide is just showing some of the some training pictures and training materials. It's not exhaustive, of course, but this is one of the picture to your left is one of the training materials that we use, the training manual that we use to train the sales teams of seed companies in Nigeria.
and we can see a session of training going on there. This picture is just me with some farmers in Benue State, Nigeria, and some farmers in Ghana during farmer field days. Discussing with them the various ways to plant seed yam, to propagate yam in a very healthy and safe manner, also of course to increase their productivity. This picture here showed a training session we held with one of the research institutes in Nigeria that has a mandate for yam. Basically just discussing how to think about the business side of things when it comes to yam breeding. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Temi. So we have two more speakers, and I would just encourage the two speakers to please try to make their presentations a bit brief because we're running behind schedule. I'll also ask the speakers that have spoken to please go to the Q&A section to answer the questions there because we might not have the time to take those questions. So with this, I would invite Ifeu Muna to please speak with us about the Nourishing Africa project.
Good afternoon. So to take you through a brief overview of Nourishing Africa. Nourishing Africa is a virtual home for young African entrepreneurs transforming the agriculture and food landscape. And the work that we do as Nourishing Africa is grounded in our vision to create a flourishing, sustainable, and just eco-food system that's spearheaded by young African entrepreneurs who will drive profitable and sustainable growth across the agriculture and food landscape. And I implore everyone to go to www.nourishingafrica.com. And for the sake of time, I'm going to speed through this presentation. But in essence, the idea of Nourishing Africa is to help entrepreneurs in the agri-food landscape scale their businesses. And so what we do is, first off, we showcase entrepreneurs and their businesses to the wider audience. And next slide, please. As well as have a membership platform which enables peer-to-peer learning, engagement, as well as access to members-only information, including data, funding opportunities, and other opportunities that we provide to our members. The hub also contains funding opportunities and events that we believe are beneficial to the wider ecosystem of entrepreneurs, as well as a robust food culture and job section. And for us at Nourishing Africa, we view the agri-food landscape in a very holistic way in which we believe that we should, as well as showcasing agribusinesses, we need to showcase traditional foods, African food, both traditional and modern, alongside the people that prepare it, so chefs and cooks. And then Nourishing Africa also hosts or contains a knowledge platform, which essentially provides information, a robust platform that provides information, data, tech and innovation tools to our users. And through this, it's our vision and our mission to ensure that we provide access to this information to an audience that might not have had it prior to. We also have original content in the form of podcasts and webinars that we create in order to provide information from entrepreneurs across the continent to other entrepreneurs and key stakeholders in the sector. We engage in offline trainings across the continent prior to the COVID pandemic. We had conducted trainings and workshops in South Africa, Kenya, Morocco, to name a few, on various aspects of the value chain, from marketing to branding, financing, and business model strategizing. As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, we pivoted our plan slightly in that we now provide a robust platform for agri-food entrepreneurs in the sector to get information not only about current health pandemic, but on how that affects the food system in Africa. And through this, not only are entrepreneurs able to provide information about their experiences while working through this pandemic, we have created a series of co-themed webinars based on providing information and resources and tools, as well as sharing insights from entrepreneurs and key stakeholders during this time. We've also engaged through this process of creating what we call an Ask an Expert segment, and this is through our engagement with entrepreneurs and realizing that we need to create more tailored programs for them to learn more and to get more information in order for them to scale their businesses. As such, each week we have a different expert in the field of entrepreneurs, in the field of agriculture and food, and they essentially answer entrepreneurs and their tailored questions in order to provide specific answers for entrepreneurs. And that is Nourishing Africa in a nutshell. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ife. And finally, we have Funke Okuwobi, and she'll be sharing about the work we do at Sahel Capital.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Funke Okuwobi from Sahel Capital. And I'll be speaking about developing talent in the agribusiness sector. And just in talent development, there are four key areas we look at. It starts from attracting talent. And the way we do that is by some of these conferences, attending industry functions, and also our interactions with the communities, working with outgrowers in some of our companies. And this enables them to learn about us. And we also use the opportunity to interact with people, with the communities in which we have investee companies. And in terms of sourcing, we source for talent via the different conferences we attend, via referrals. Referrals is one of the important ways in which we source talent for people that worked in similar companies and just industry people. And then we also search via LinkedIn and adverts. And one interesting point is, as much as the focus is on agribusiness, we also have challenges where we have to source a lot of other roles aside from the key ones. But all in all, we just resource based on people's experiences. And I'll also be talking more about some of the skills we look out for. And in terms of development, we do a lot of on-the-job trainings in our companies. And this is so that people gain the experience that is needed in the sector. And also external and internal trainings, both some in Nigeria, some outside the country, just to ensure that people have the right skills. Also coaching and performance management helps in the development of talent. And to ensure that when we identify talents, we are able to retain them, there's a lot of ensuring that we have competitive pay. There's career progression, career planning, and a couple of all of that. Next, please. So I'll just touch on some of the skills we look out for. And just because of time, I'll just talk about a few of them. And I'll talk about technical skills. Well, in this sector, we've had a lot of challenges identifying people with technical skills. And speaking with educators today, it's one area that we would like people to focus a lot on. In recruiting for some of our investee companies, we've had to recruit people from outside the country. We've had to recruit expatriates for some of the very technical agriculture-specific roles. For example, when we're trying to source plantation managers, for some agronomists, sometimes you have to look in other countries because for specialized skills. And I know that it's a challenge right now, but I think it's something we can work on and also develop. So also for people, we also look out for people that are technologically savvy, people that know how to use these technologies, and people that have the knowledge, even the educational knowledge of some of these things. And also importantly, we also look out for business and entrepreneurial skills. As much as it is agribusiness and agriculture, there are also key management skills that we need to run this business, because it's not just farming and it's also running a proper business. So those are some of the things we specifically look out for. And just in concluding, I'll talk about some of the ways in which I think that we can partner with the educators to develop and improve the sector. And one of it is internships. Ramat had spoken earlier about 10 scholars that have gone through the Sahel program, which is excellent. And also listening to the scholars, they've learned a lot. So I'm also encouraging educators to partner with other companies such that for every graduate or every student that is going for internship, they have the opportunity to work in medium-sized companies, and they understand
what is expected, you understand, see the expanse of work that is going on. Also similar to that is exchange programs. This is both for students and educators. Because of the level of the development of agriculture in Nigeria, it's important that people get to see best practices from other countries. So it doesn't even have to be countries in other continents, even other countries in Africa. I know that for some of the works that Health Consulting is doing, we reach out to other African countries, and it's important that students and even graduates get to see this. And lastly, I'll touch on curriculum development. It's important that the private sector partners with educators in developing this curriculum to ensure that we have the right curriculum. And then when graduates leave school, they actually are working with relevant skills. So I think I'll stop here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Funke. And thank you to all the speakers. We've run out of time, so I'll just take about 30 seconds to do a quick recap. So Rama spoke very quickly about the Sahel Scholars Program and how we go about the assessment and selection of these scholars. Ayodeji spoke about Aldin, and he talked about the systems approach to solving the problems in the dairy sector. He also spoke about the importance of various partnerships in that space. Temi Tokwe talked about Yiswa, and he talked about how Yiswa addresses the scarcity of high quality CDM and establishing functional seed systems in the yam value chain. Ife spoke about the young agricultural entrepreneurs and how they help help entrepreneurs to scale up their businesses. And finally, Funke talked about the talent development and looking at it from four big buckets: attraction, sourcing, development, and retaining them. Thank you very much to the speakers. I would encourage the speakers to please go and check the Q&A section. There are a few questions that I think you might need to address, to answer some of those questions. Thank you for this session. I hand it over to Ifeoluwa.
Thank you very much, Olumide Lawson, the Sahel team, for sharing our work across various value chains and how we're developing talent for the sector. So next, we'll be going straight into the panel discussion, and I would like to hand over to our managing partner at Sahel Consulting, Ndidi Nwuneli, who will be moderating this session. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ife, and good afternoon to all of you. It's really a privilege and a pleasure to have you on the call. I want to recognize and salute Catherine for a fantastic presentation. So much passion, and you have quite a few questions in the Q&A, Catherine, so I hope you're still with us. We've assembled a wonderful panel of very distinguished individuals, and I'm going to quickly introduce them. We have Professor Sani Latif Oladimeji, who is the president of the International Society for Tropical Root Crops, and he wears many, many hats. He's on the steering committee for AWARD, Africa Women in Agriculture Research and Development, and he's the former deputy vice chancellor for the Federal University of Agriculture, Abeokuta. Well, delighted to have you, Professor Sani. We have Dr. Adam Schaefer. Welcome. Adam Schaefer is international business and development professional with over 35 years of experience. We share a lot in common with Adam Schaefer. He's also a proud graduate of the Harvard Business School, and he served as a chief of party for many, many organizations and in many roles. And he's currently in Nigeria as the chief of party for CNFA, really focused on crowding and financing into the agriculture sector. Welcome, Adam. And then we have Chike Nwagu, who is the founder and CEO of Nuvos Agro. It's a platform that organizes smallholder farmers and provides access to training and support for them, leveraging digital technology, and it has a wealth of experience in this sector. And last but not the least, we have Mrs. Zubeda Damaka Abubakar, who is a lawyer, executive director for LNZ, one of our great partners based in Kano. She has a wealth of experience. She was a former commissioner for budget and economic planning, Kano State, and former commissioner for women affairs and social development, also in Kano State. So we're delighted to have all four of you. Welcome. We're going to dig right into the panel discussion. I'll start with Hajia Zubeda. You have been employing people into your company for many, many years. So I'd like to hear from you. What do you feel are the major challenges and opportunities when it comes to refining agribusiness education in Nigeria, and what are the key gaps that you've noticed from your hiring in this sector?
Thank you very much, Ndidi, and I'm happy to be here. Basically, I'm going straight to the point. The issue we are having with most of our agricultural graduates in our employment is that most of them, they lack the required skill needed for the job. What I mean here is they lack the practical knowledge of what we want them to do in the farm. What we normally hire is animal scientists, because we deal with animals. And you realize that when they come to the farm, they only know the theory, but they can't apply what they learn in school. So there is a gap there. And I am thinking that is because of lack of agricultural enterprise where they can go and learn the practical skill when they are in school. So basically, that is the most challenging aspect of we are facing in our employment.
I can hear you.
You are muted, Ndidi. I can't hear you.
Okay, so thank you. I said thank you very much. So LNZ is obviously a thriving company in Kano. And so you must have had some success with at least recruiting some staff. What values have you been able to identify that have enabled you? What values have you looked for in the staff that you've been able to hire? And how have you trained them to ensure that they can stay in the organization?
The value normally, it's their ability to understand, because what we are dealing with, we are doing the practical training ourselves. So their ability to catch up in good time, to fit in into the system, that is just what we are looking for. Because most of them, when they come, they know the theory, but if you put them to the field, they cannot apply what they even learn. So we are doing the practical training ourselves. So once we have graduates that are willing and patient enough to learn on the job, learn the practical aspect of the job, then we are fine. And thank God we have some of them that are good enough, and they are the one we are using, so to say, now in the farm, some of them, because we are able to retain them because of they learn quickly, and we are okay with their performance. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll come back to you with some follow-on questions, but let me move on to Dr. Adam Schaefer. So you've been in this sector for a while, and you've basically been working with SMEs since you got into Nigeria, trying to crowd in financing. What gaps have you observed in the workforce in the private sector? And while you're answering that, maybe you can tell us a bit about your initiative and what you're trying to achieve.
Thank you, Ndidi. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm sorry that we can't do it in person. My name is Adam Schaefer. I'm the managing director and chief of party of the USAID Feed the Future funded Nigeria agribusiness investment activity, which is a 5-year effort focused on improving the enabling environment and supporting financial and investment transactions in agribusiness. Our main office in Abuja, we have 6, soon to be 7 state offices. Over the past year, been operating about a year, we've done about $20 million worth of transactions. It's worth mentioning that in this activity, we focused on 7 states: Kebbi, Kaduna, Benue, Niger, Delta, Ebonyi, and Cross River. And as a Feed the Future initiative, we focus on nutrition and food security in 5 value chains: maize, rice, soybean, cowpea, and aquaculture. Personally, I've been doing economic development, including improving the enabling environment, access to finance, trade, and entrepreneurship, and job creation for over 30 years. Before that, I was with Schlumberger. After business school, I also went to Harvard. I started a series of my own businesses in the U.S., in Africa, and in Asia. My first time in Nigeria was in 1980, where I worked in Wari. And I guess something went right there, because I ended up spending the rest of my career in sub-Saharan Africa. So today, the focus of my presentation is about the gaps that I've observed in Nigeria's agribusiness workforce and what I think needs to happen in order for Nigeria to transform the sector. That's a big question. First, let me say, I can't really speak for 7 minutes about anything. And so it's far too short, and it's certainly far too short to address this topic comprehensively. So forgive me. I'm going to just mention as many ideas as I can, touch upon many issues without going into much detail. And I've written some notes down, which is not characteristic of me, but I really want to try to keep to the time limit. Secondly, it's hard to reference the agribusiness sector as one group. To me, the context needs to be understood. The needs, expectations, and access to training differs greatly between farmers and aggregators and processors and exporters, not to mention the most vulnerable groups, including women and youth. Plus, you know, while many demographic trends are similar across the 46 countries of sub-Saharan Africa, my experience is that there are also many, many differences in culture, in expectations, in dreams, and in ways of working together in communication. And even within Nigeria, which I find one of the most complex countries in sub-Saharan Africa, between the 36 states, there are also differences. So it's hard to group these as one. Okay, back to the topic. Knowing from personal experience and conversations I have with friends and colleagues who are running agribusiness, finding appropriately skilled and experienced staff is very hard in Nigeria. I also don't think this conundrum applies only to agribusiness. Today's increasingly interdependent world with massive amounts of money, resources, products, people, all moving across state and international boundaries requires entrepreneurs and business leaders to have a keen sense of the market. This includes the macro and micro influences, the competition, the legal and regulatory framework, alternative sources and costs of money, trends, and the latest technologies. So this leads to the most common gap I see in my work with entrepreneurs is insufficient analysis of the market dynamics and trends. And this isn't just an SME first-time startup entrepreneurial problem. I have an MBA, I've started many businesses, and I've made the same mistake twice. Hopefully not again. So looking at the processing plants in Nigeria, in most manufacturing organizations, very few run at full capacity or have ever run at full capacity. Most are less than 50%. Now, why build a rice processing mill only to realize too late that you can't get enough paddy to break even? Why not build a smaller mill, fully utilize it, and then with the profits, expand later? What happens when I go to an entrepreneur or a SME and ask, what would prevent you from becoming 10 times as big? That's a question that very few can even answer. They're starstruck 10 times, never even thought about it. Another common gap I see is a lack of understanding of the fundamentals of business. And we're going to get closer to academia here. This includes planning, record keeping, internal monitoring, evaluation, human resource management, marketing, and financial management, knowing when you need money, when you don't need money, and knowing where to go to get those funds. And most importantly, cost control. In the surveys we've done, I believe the biggest difference between profitable and unprofitable farms and agribusinesses is not their level of revenue, their crop, the quality of the inputs, their agricultural practices, their use of technology, or access to finance, which are all obviously very, very important. I believe the main thing is their ability to manage and control their costs. Remember, it's only the bottom line that counts. The last constraint I will mention is the general attitude of Nigeria's smallholder farmers who produce the majority of the food we eat today. Most are still farming in the traditional manner, more or less oriented to subsistence farming as they were taught by their parents and their grandparents. I believe a massive behavioral change is required to get the farmers, and most importantly, the women and youth, thinking about agriculture as a business. This was referenced by Catherine in her opening speech. Agriculture has to be seen as a viable and an attractive way to make money, to build a career path, you know, to create wealth, to look at it as a good investment. There is no mean, this is no mean feat, and it will require the attention, commitment, and alignment of all societal actors to do this. And I emphasize women and youth as their full engagement in the sector is critical in Nigeria achieving sustainable food security, stability, and employment. Needless to say, changing the religious and social norms related to women goes far beyond the scope of this conference and far beyond the scope of my activity. But to me, this is just as significant. Now, what can we do to address some of the above? I have 7 recommendations. First, back to behavioral change. Building on Catherine's presentation, we need a massive campaign to educate and convince the general population that agribusiness is an attractive career path and a critically important sector to Nigeria's growing non-oil economy. This must include academia at the secondary and tertiary and vocational levels, as well as all spheres of government, churches, mosques, and financial institutions. I wasn't living in Nigeria at the time, but I remember how effective and efficient Nigeria was in promoting breastfeeding when it increased from, I think, less than 10% to 80 or 90% in a relatively short period of time. That has now fallen back for some reason, but it can be, it was achieved. And now I wonder, can this be done again for agriculture? Second, curriculum change. At the tertiary and vocational levels, I believe it will be important to focus on a more practical as opposed to theoretical curriculum. And this isn't just Nigeria. We need to educate our workforce for today's market. In order to achieve this, I think the private sector needs to engage with the academic institutions in a far more robust manner. This would include perhaps co-op programs where students spend at least one, if not all, summers working in a company related to their field of study. Having private sector leaders as guest lecturers, having students spend the day following someone who's in the job they think they want, we call those shadow days. As a senior project, having student teams research and prepare a bankable business plan for a product or service of their choice, and get mentors from the private sector who could donate maybe 8 hours per month to sit with the team, a team of, let's say, 3 to 5 people, and advise them. I've seen this done successfully across Africa, north and south. The NYSC system could probably be revamped to make it more applicable to agriculture. I'm thinking of sort of the draft or a conscription. Nigeria needs to prepare its workforce over the next few years to focus on agribusiness.
Adam, we're hearing a lot of background noise. I don't know what.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay, we'll try to stop that. 1 second. So anyway, the NYSC program, I think, you know, maybe it could be revamped. Maybe it could focus on agribusiness, maybe provide graduates with a choice where in the value chain they focus, production, processing, manufacturing, R&D, policy, you know. And I think it might require some incentives to be provided by the government to the private sector hosts to get the best out of the NYSC. Because I have a number of coppers, and I'm trying to build their capacity as best I can, and I think they're a great, great resource. 4, a challenging problem here is that in Nigeria, often students aren't allowed to study or aren't able to study the topic of their choice. You know, they don't get into those schools, and unless their parents have money or personal connections, they may not get into the program. So they end up reapplying and reapplying and either not going to school, university at all, or going into a field that they're not interested in. This is a tragedy. But I believe post COVID-19, we'll be staying closer to home. And I think this opens up an opportunity for the government to invest in the state universities, and that they need to align with private sector, modernize their curricula to serve their populations and to attract women and youth into the agribusiness sector. The professors need not only to be technically competent, but they, you know, to make it attractive, they need to be great motivators. They need to have good private sector connections, if not private sector experience. it can't be such a separation from academia to entering the workforce. It's trying to bridge that gap. I think using technology, you know, guest lecturers could also be sourced online from anywhere in the world. You know, I don't want to steal the thunder away from the next speaker, but distance education, webinars, video conferencing, and other technologies are certainly play a part in modernizing Nigeria's educational sector. Number five, vocational training. This is also a critical aspect of what is needed. As mentioned above, the governments could also invest in the local state level vocational training institutes, especially those related to agriculture. And these could be from equipment manufacturing and servicing and repair to farming, to post-harvest handling, to logistics, to packaging, etc. They too should have entrance exams. And for people who've been out of the school a while, there should be a training available to bring them up to the entrance level required. You know, we need to sort the best students, the most committed, the most passionate. We need to set the stage correctly for this to succeed. In the U.S., for example, we have what's called the GED, the General Education Diploma, which serves as a credible secondary school diploma for people who never finished school. So this leads into the sixth point, which is certification. I think certification is a useful tool here. In many countries, there are entrance exams to get into university. I would suggest an exam at the end of secondary school oriented to today's market that must be passed before graduating. This might replace the need for entry-level exams at the universities, but you know, maybe not. You know, the same should be applied to graduating university. Yes, there are final exams, but maybe these need to be revised to focus on the practical aspects of the field as opposed to theoretical. I like the idea of the CBN's AgSMIS program that requires training in order to be eligible for AgSMIS loans. However, 5 days of training is not going to turn anybody into a business expert or guarantee repayment of the loan. So I think that continuous learning, maybe in short courses for those that are employed and can't leave their place of work for a period of time, should be considered. Again, the AgSMIS project with NISAL MFB and the EDCs seems to be on the right track. And lastly, seven, of utmost importance to all of this is the delivery model. You know, how to reach rural populations, how to reach women who are often not allowed to go to a co-ed school or even be trained by a male extension service officer. Here again, technology is a big part of the answer, as well as a campaign to empower women's rights to be fully engaged in the workforce, either as employees or entrepreneurs. Also, you know, whether employees or business managers, it's not possible to leave their employment for a month, a week, or even a day. So how do you reach these people? I think, you know, short modules, I think opportunities for evening and weekend courses, things like that have to be considered to reach those people who are in the rural areas that just simply do not have the ability to leave their work or travel distances to a bricks and mortar educational institution.
In closing, I
want to say that there are many good examples of these in Nigeria. There's good aggregators and processors who are reaching to their outgrowers, reaching to their suppliers. It's not all bad news. And I tried to mention as many things as I could. Sorry, I went over. Thanks for your attention. And I'll stop now. Have a good day, all.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam. That is, I think you've given your own keynote address. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
We actually had over 350 students in a conference earlier today, our virtual conference on technology. And the appetite for learning is immense. And our young people are crying out for some of the suggestions you recommended. And Sahel has definitely been implementing a lot of those tools, which you heard from my colleagues earlier, in rural communities, leveraging technology.
But there's so much we need to do to this, to our curriculum. And I'm sure that Chike will share about how technology is being addressed. But one of the things, and one of the reasons we selected this topic, is that when we meet young people who are in agriculture, who are studying agriculture in many of your universities, it's usually their third or fourth choice option. They couldn't get into medicine. They couldn't get into pharmacy. They couldn't get into microbiology. Somehow they ended up in agriculture, and we have to shift that and change that. So thank you, Adam, for talking about the need for mindset change and very practical recommendations. I love the one around IT. We have mandatory ITs right now for food technology graduates and engineering graduates. Maybe we should do industrial training in ag businesses for our students as well. So Chike, I know Adam has taken some of your time, but can you just come in here and give us some perspectives from Nuvos Agro as to how what role you're playing in the ecosystem first, and then what you see as the role of technology in agribusiness training and agribusiness development?
Okay, to make it quick, you know, I'll just continue maybe from where Adam stopped, because he's left me very little to do, you know. I think for us, technology is more field-facing technology and education rather than the classroom-facing one. COVID has taught us, of course, that we can meet like this and have conferences like this without actually being physically there. You know, but there are quite a number of constraints when you start thinking about what to do in the field, because most of the people that need education are the smallholder farmers who are right there, out there. You know, unfortunately, 70% of our illiterate population are still the people that provide this service. You know, so you would have to tackle literacy. You would have to tackle tele-density, because most of the great access that we have are limited to urban areas and not rural areas. So if you want to talk to someone who is illiterate, you know, in terms of writing and reading, in the rural area with very poor connectivity, how are you going to do it? So there's some real infrastructural barriers to technology education. But then it doesn't mean that all hope is lost. For several years, we've worked on programs and projects that keep talking about extension, because obviously supporting farmers in the field is key. Knowledge transfer is key. You know, disease reporting, you know, and intervention is key. Nowadays, we keep talking about telemedicine, but obviously teleagriculture is something that probably is more needed, especially if you look at Nigeria and you see that there are maybe only about 6,000 extension officers to manage for 40 million, they say, farmers. You know, so technology can be a force multiplier, you know, when it comes to education and transmission of knowledge. But like every good thing, you know, it needs to have good content, you know, because like they say, education makes a good man better, you know, and a bad man even worse. So we have to be sure about the kind of content that we're passing out there and what needs to be done. But I think above all this, the biggest question is who pays for this? Because we have to develop models that are sustainable and can pay for themselves. So that's about the biggest challenge that we have. In terms of what the lowest hanging fruits really are, you know, I think it harks back to something that Adam quite mentioned, you know. I think we like to think big and go for it. You know, in agriculture, the best thing, and in everything, the best thing usually is to have a design thinking approach. You know, prototype, test it out, and then scale up. You know, So I think maybe I've run out of time. Have I?
Thank you very much, Ike. This has been very useful. I'm just curious, from your own perspective with Nuvos Agro, you are also an employer in this sector. Yeah. And you work with farmers leveraging technology. What are some practical ways, and you went to university in Nigeria, what are some practical ways you think the university professors listening and the educators listening can use technology in their classrooms? And what are some cost-effective ways that they can leverage existing knowledge that's on the internet as well to teach their students?
Okay. It's crazy that most of the innovation coming up in agribusiness, especially around technology, is coming from people outside of agriculture. You know? So I think we have to have more of a multidisciplinary kind of approach to it. Some of the biggest problems are not agronomic problems. You know? Some of the biggest problems are, you know, access issues. So number one is that for people, and I'm either a victim or a beneficiary of it, you know, there's a lot of knowledge out there, you know, on the internet. When I went to school, I read geology, which had nothing to do with agriculture, but I think you go out there and you find out that there's a lot of practical knowledge. Knowledge on demand is what we really need. Like I said, COVID has taught us that we can call upon resources from anywhere in the world, you know, and I think that most lecturers would benefit from actually reaching out to the field, especially to people who actually are running programs out there, you know, and maybe be able to connect to farmers directly so that both the practical and the theoretical aspects of this practice, you know, can meet and probably yield more value for everyone involved.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And now I'm going to come back to Professor Sani. You have been in academia. And you've heard all the great suggestions from Catherine to Haji Azubeda to Chike to Adam. Why aren't we seeing the changes we need in agribusiness education? And what practical recommendations can you share about how we can change the curriculum to make it more practical and more attractive to our students?
Well, I want to thank SAHEL Capital for this invite, and I want to thank all the speakers. Number one, let us note that Nigerian university systems and Nigerian academics, most of them are eminently qualified as a resource, which we have demonstrated either in the country or outside Nigeria. That's number one. So the issue of human resources as to capability or ability to adapt into our modern teaching technology is there. What is the real problem? I look at my own university, for instance. We have about 15,000 students. If you want us to go factual, modernize all teachings, all the students must have computers, laptops. You must have internet access to the whole university uninterrupted. And the real culprit, the real danger problem we have is electricity. If you do not solve that one, there's nothing you can modernize in Nigeria or Africa. And I look at Israel for a case study. I've been to Israel, I've been to Harvard, and I will give you a case study of Israel. Israel is modernized, has already modernized agriculture, precision agriculture. They are using drip irrigation. For you to use drip irrigation, you must have your panel, you must have your computer, you must have everything, uninterrupted power supply. We do not have that in Africa. very few universities now in Nigeria are also now investing in having uninterrupted power supply. And I know that that's part of why Academic Staff Union of Universities in Nigeria is on strike. Two, we have some industries that are partnered with Nigerian universities before. Nestle PLC partnered with my university in soybean popularization in southwestern Nigeria. I'm aware that Flour Mill of Nigeria is partnering with University of Ibadan as I'm talking to you. There are some leverage opportunity there. By the time industry and institutions network and partner together, the research, the internship, the industrial training, some level of practical orientations will definitely be there. Because students will have opportunity of going to the industries, and industrialists will also have opportunity interacting with the faculties in the university system. That is the area we need to scale up, and I'm very happy Sahel Capital is also now coming in. If we have a private NGO like Sahel Capital working with the Nigerian University System, National University Commission, for instance, we scale it up, and we have to make sure that everybody works together in that area. If we do that, there are so many opportunities in the industries that we can also leverage on. The third major critical point is what I tag mentoring and coaching. And this issue of mentoring and coaching will not limit us on South-South collaboration. It has to be North and South, South and South. I was very fortunate with my team. We've had opportunity of North and South, South and South in the world. African, Caribbean, Pacific, working together with European partners and American partners. Very few percentage of us have such opportunity in Nigeria. Through donor support, through international advanced research laboratories like International Institute for Tropical Agriculture or Natural Resources Institute in UK. So we need that international collaboration is also very important. And the last point of practical is for us to be able to have access opportunity of attending this kind of virtual conferencing, do it yourself. We must all actually do it ourselves and be able to leverage that opportunity of raising new set of graduates that will be competent technically and also be competent practically and business oriented. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Sani. You've raised some very practical limitations, and we're aware of many of them. But I'll push this back again, and I'm glad that there are so many faculty members on the call. We had over 300 students today, 350 at the highest point, and we know that so many more wanted to join. We had 1,800 register, primarily because of the electricity challenges you've talked about, access to data. It's real, and we recognize that. But in spite of that, we still believe that agribusiness education in our schools needs to be updated because agriculture is still being taught as a science and not as a business. So I'm going to come back to Mrs. Zubeda just to follow up on all these comments you've heard. You've had the benefit of being in government and you also are a very successful entrepreneur. What do we need to do to change the government's perspective on agribusiness education and to get curriculum changes? And what can private sector do from your own perspective, LNZ and other companies, to partner with the government to ensure that this happens rapidly? Because all of us complain about staff and staff not having the skills, and this is limiting our sector. So what are some practical things we, private sector, can do to work with government? And what can we do to change mindsets as well?
Okay. Thank you very much, Ndidi. The speakers have said it all, but what I am going to say is just a rider to what Adam has already said. That is on the curriculum aspect of the whole discussion. Because you see, what we are learning in the university at the university is just 4-year course that is being taught in the classroom. and maybe we have a year of intent or attachment in wherever they hardly find where to go and do the attachment. So you can find an agricultural student doing attachment in a plastic industry. I don't know what they are learning there. So I think the curriculum, we have to maybe put it in a way that we spend 2 good years in the university learning in the classroom. Then the remaining two years, we should do it in the field. What I mean in the field, that they don't have to go and do it in a farm or in an agricultural enterprise. We encourage them to do it on their own, have their own farmland, demonstrate whatever it is that they learn in class. They have to put it into practice. And at the end of the day, you realize that even before they finish the university, they may start even employing people to do some job for them. At the end of the day, instead of us graduating students that are going out to seek for job, we might end up graduating employers of labor, because already they are into the business. They know they can make the mistake, and while they are in school, they are being corrected. And from the private sector's point of view, we are always willing, and I think we have to open up. But mind you that we are not many. So we cannot accommodate the whole student that are coming out from the university. So the best thing is to allow them do it on their own. Let them decide what exactly they want to do, and then let them give a try on it. And for the government, I think the only thing we need to do is just to elect the right people that have the interest of us in mind. People that can align with our thinking. But if we keep on electing people that have other agendas in their mind, definitely we can get it right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We've heard repeatedly practical education that is rooted in agribusiness, the need to reform and leverage technology to reform our classroom experience to attract young people to this sector. We've heard this repeatedly. And we have so many questions. I'd really encourage our panelists to please respond to the questions that have come in the Q&A box, so that we can ensure that our participants and the lecturers who have come in to spend some time with us have responses. I know a few people are raising their hand and want to get in. Dr. Godwin is raising his hand and wants to get in. I'm going to allow just one comment from somebody raising their hand, but you have to keep it very, very brief. Can we unclick some of our attendees so that they can participate? Can we unmute Dr. Godwin, please?
I hope you can hear me.
Yes, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Sahel, for inviting me to join the workshop. I thank you indeed. I remember your last visit to National Rural Research Institute when we interacted. I greet you, Professor Sani. What I want to say is that to get these graduates from our tertiary institutions, to get them queued into the practical agribusiness. Remember, you are asking them to explore new challenges, to know where to compete, to know what sort of customers to target, the geographical scope, product line, etc., and even the channels. These are the things they need to be sure of before they venture into the business. I will still emphasize that Nigeria universities should, as a matter of urgency, redirect their curriculum to get the graduates queued in earlier in the career so that they fit into the industries. This is the point I want to make.
Thank you very much, Dr. Godwin. I think you're preaching to some of the converted on the line. We definitely need practical education that can ensure that our young people leave the university able to create jobs for themselves and others. And if they're going to join the workforce, they have to have practical skills, not only knowledge of the sector, but also critical life and leadership skills to enable them add value in a work environment. And so thank you very much for your comments. I'm going to allow Dr. Yunus to talk, but please make it very brief because we're rounding up. Dr. Yunus? Unfortunately, I'm struggling with unmuting Dr. Yunus. So please just write in your comments. Unfortunately, we can't take everyone who's raising their hand. The sad reality is that, as somebody wrote, this should have been a two to three-day conference. And we've heard the suggestions. And I think, judging from Adam's 7-point agenda, we're going to share this with the National University Commission and also create an op-ed on this and have many of you engage to ensure that we get your support to create a lot of momentum to channel the changes required. COVID-19, if anything, has shown us how urgent it is to ensure that we have strong food ecosystems. Our ecosystems are so fragile. And after 6 weeks of lockdowns in some of our cities, prices have dramatically increased. Our farmers are struggling to get their produce to market. And everybody needs to reform the agriculture sector. And more than ever before, because of the oil decline, agriculture is now being recognized as the new oil. And everybody's looking for talent in this sector. We're depending on new educators to create that talent and the researchers to provide the data to enable us to transform the sector. So this sense of urgency is something we have to capitalize on quickly and decisively as a sector working together. At this point, I think I'm going to hand back to Ife, but I want to thank our panelists again. Thank you, Madam Zubeda. Thank you, Professor Sani. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, GK. And thank you, Catherine, for all your great insights and comments today. We will be following up with each of you individually to get your support and assistance as we try to transform the agribusiness sector. Sahel is committed to this, and I also posted in our comments in the chat our most recent quarterly, which is focused on talent in agriculture. It's a free quarterly publication. It's quite detailed and talks about extension, curriculum, policy, programs, and I'd really like you to please share that with the key decision makers in your institutions and share it quite widely with funders as well, so that we can collaboratively work on addressing the challenges in our sector and preparing our youth for leadership and employment in this sector. So thank you very much. Thank you again to our wonderful panelists. Now I'm going to pass it back to Ife.
Thank you very much, Ndidi. I also want to extend my thanks to the panelists as well. Thank you for such insightful session, and we definitely generated a lot of practical ideas and also a lot of questions from participants. And so in the few minutes that we have left, I want to encourage you to also go into the Q&A session and also answer some of the questions that have been addressed to you. And also to our participants, in a couple of days, the recording will be available on our website. So we encourage you to visit us at Sahel Consult and also, Sahel Capital to download this. At this time, I would like to call on operating partner, Mr. Olaniyi Oladejo at Sahel Capital, to deliver the closing remarks.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Niyi Oladejo, operating partner at Sahel Capital Agribusiness Managers Limited. On behalf of the entire Sahel team, I want to thank everyone for making time out to participate in this Maiden Sahel Educators Conference. To Professor Dogan, our keynote speaker, thank you for your 5 simple yet powerful questions, which really provides an effective framework for ongoing improvement. To our panelists, we say thank you too for the valuable insights from your hands-on engagements in your various fields in the agribusiness space. a number of suggestions and recommendations came out from the sessions, from the panel discussion particularly. First, some about making the curriculum more practical, getting Nigerians to embrace the mindset that agriculture is a career and a business, not just for subsistence, and also about rethinking our knowledge delivery models and embracing use of technology. However, as we all go back to our various spheres of influence after this conference, trying to drive change and to achieve and collaborating to achieve the desired impact we're all looking for, I implore us to use Professor Duggan's simple framework, because it provides everything we need. And with that, we can drive and get to the desired change we're all looking for, to make this Nigerian agribusiness space not just one for subsistence farming, but also for a commercial-oriented venture and space. Lastly, I also want to appreciate all the members of the committee that planned this conference. They put in a lot of hard work and a lot of hours, and we appreciate you. You guys rock. This session today also lends credence to the need to make the Sahel Educators Conference an annual event. And we're using this opportunity to tell you, expect and look forward to our invitation for the next conference in 2021. See you all next year. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We truly appreciate your support. The conference is now ending. Thank you very much.